We're here on KSON, KS95, and if you can believe it, we're talking politics with the Iowa governor's race. Will be up in 2026. Current Governor Kim Reynolds hasn't announced yet whether she's going to run or not, but we do have a Republican candidate who's running for governor. He's a former state legislature, and he's a pastor from Williamsburg, Iowa. Brad Sherman with us here on KSON. Brad, good to talk to you. And you've obviously made the decision before anybody else on the Republican side. Take me through your process of why you want to be the governor of the state of Iowa.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's good to talk to you. Good to hear from you again. There are several reasons. One, this is something that we've prayed about and just feel like it's a calling. It's something we have to do in obedience to God. As you mentioned, I've been a pastor, for many years. And hearing God's not a problem. All of us do the best we can to hear from God. We don't hear perfectly, but I'm as confident about this as anything I've ever heard. God speaks to people in different ways. And we seek his direction, but that's the primary thing. But we've also got on our website, you'll notice it's shermanforiowa.com. There's a tagline there that says restoring the foundations of freedom. And that's not just a little cliche tagline. That is my heartbeat. I've spent many years teaching biblical worldview, the founding principles of our nation, that sort of thing. I always saw myself as an influencer, maybe trying to help people in politics understand the founding principles of our nation and how they were based on the Judeo-Christian principles. And so I've been doing that for years. But then of course, in 2022, I ran for state house. And so that was just another step for me. It just felt like that was the right thing to do. So I did that. And I served a term in the legislature. And I didn't just quit doing that after one term. We had a tragedy in our family. My daughter passed away, and so we made plans to move to a different district. And so I recruited a guy to run in my place, and he actually has won now and is doing a good job. But turns out we're not moving after all now, and we just didn't feel like we were done. And people started encouraging me, and then we started praying about it, and God confirmed it. So here we are. We're off and running.
And I'm sure
that's the short answer there.
Yeah. I'm sure you've gotten a lot about questions about Governor Reynolds, and maybe how do you feel about going through a primary to if she does decide? I mean, because at one point the rumors were last year that she was not going to run. Now the rumors are that she is going to run, but nothing has been finalized just yet. But how do you feel about going into a potential primary?
Well, we've told people, I've known for about a year that we were going to do this. I've just been telling a few key people and friends but then last November after the election, I just felt like it was the right thing to do to call Governor Reynolds and tell her what my plans were. So I did, after the election, toward the middle of November, somewhere around there, I got her on the phone and said, it's a little awkward because I don't know your plans for sure, but we just feel like God's leading us to do this. And so we're going to run for governor. And at the time she told me that she had not made a concrete decision. And so, I just wanted her to hear it from me instead of a rumor. So that's the last I've actually spoken with her about this. Like I said, that was last November. But going into this against her, it's not really about who's running and who isn't running for me. I appreciate a lot of things that Governor Reynolds has done. She's been a good conservative leader in the state. But there are some issues that are different. And I think that's probably the best way to answer that question.
Sure. What do you see as some of your differences? What issues are you strong on? Maybe that differs you from others.
Well, one is, there's a big issue in the state. I think most people are aware of it, especially if it's affecting them. And that's the issue of eminent domain being used to build this carbon capture pipeline. And so the CO2 pipeline is not a, it's not a public utility. You know, most people don't have CO2 piped into their houses like they do gas or electric or water or something like that. It's for a private company, which is not a common carrier. And so I just don't think eminent domain should be used to take people's land. And I've heard the stories of people's property rights already being violated on this. And from the best I can tell, Governor Reynolds is not, certainly not resisting this effort and appears to be supporting it. So I think that would be an issue. You know, and you know, there's a lot of questions surrounding all that. You know, I'm not going to make any accusations. And another issue would be surrounding the COVID issue. I know there was a lot of businesses that were shut down during that time. That was a strange time in our history. And I grant you, most of us didn't know what to think about it when it first hit. And so the whole idea of emergency powers and shutting down businesses and churches and telling people they have to wear masks. And, you know, it was just very oppressive. And now, like I say, we didn't understand it in the beginning, but the bottom line is that it violated constitutional rights. And the Constitution doesn't say that we have these rights except in emergency. And so I think we have to get way more focused on protecting our rights. And I know there was a bill in last session, and also it's in the legislature again this session to adjust the emergency powers of the governor's office. And that would be, you know, the main thing that it does would be to limit the number of times that it can be extended, these emergency proclamations. And so and after one or two, I think it was, then they have to go to the legislature to get approval to keep extending it. So I think that's a good balance on the emergency powers issue. And, you know, that way, you know, you can, I'm not blaming anybody, but I'm just saying there's a lot of pressure that can be put on an executive or something like that. And so there needs to be a check and balance there so that pressure doesn't create wrong decisions.
We're talking with Brad Sherman, Republican candidate for governor. I want to circle back to that eminent domain issue because that's a big one here in this area. There's a lot of counties in our listing area that are affected by the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline in that battle. Counties have had just, you know, ridiculous Board of Supervisor meetings with a lot of upset people over it. If you were talking to some of these people who were afraid of them losing their land to a potential pipeline, you know, what would you say to them?
Well, I would tell them that I'd do everything I can to prevent that from happening. So more than just the principle of not using eminent domain to take private property for a private business, I mean, that's strong enough on its own. But this pipeline is also a very different, it's a different kind of pipeline. It's a different animal. This carbon capture pipeline is it's not like petroleum or some of the other pipelines we have. It's under a super high pressure. The carbon is almost liquefied. It's called a supercritical state. It runs at about 1,500 to 2,500, somewhere in that range, pounds per square inch. And if that were to rupture, the CO2 is in that state, in that semi-liquid state, would lay upon the ground and fill up low-lying areas, and it would just eliminate all oxygen. So everything that breathes would die. In the case of a first responder, automobiles and trucks or whatever can't drive into that area because the engines won't run. And so, and they're wanting to run this pipeline close to schools and homes. And so that's just a whole different issue that goes along with the pipeline. There's a danger factor there that hasn't, I don't think, has been properly addressed in the whole argument. So that's a couple more things about the pipeline issue that I think need to be addressed, and at least that people need to know about, because I feel like the people just haven't been educated properly on it, on the general sense.
Yeah, well, it seems to be. It has risen up the danders of many residents in some of our counties here. Obviously, another issue that the governor has talked a lot about is education, school choice, that type of thing. You know, where is your stance on that, and what can you, what would you do to especially if President Trump wants to eliminate the Department of Education and send it back to the states? He's identified Iowa as one of those states who should make their own decision. You know, how do you feel about what should be done if that happens?
Well, first off, I would say I do support the idea of a national Department of Education. I believe in something called what I call constitutional state sovereignty. It's not a new concept, but you know, there are only certain areas of federal government that they're authorized by the Constitution to operate in, and you know, and it gets twisted around. But I think we need to get back to the 10th Amendment concept of everything else belonging to the states. But as far as the education in Iowa, you know, we used to be number one, and then I don't know, we're far down the list now, and there's a lot of issues actually on a docket right now in the legislature. But we need to get back to some very basic math, reading, writing, and arithmetic. I know there are bills now dealing with DEI and getting that out of our schools. I mean, our schools should never be propaganda arms of a left-wing ideology. And so that's going to take a lot of work to clean that up. I believe that as far as school choice and things like that, the parents, this is tax money from the parents are paying. And so they ought to have some say in where their tax money, especially for their own children, where their tax money is going. And so that was something we did in the last legislative assembly. Was to establish these, and this was Governor Reynolds's idea and others, was to establish educational savings accounts. And I was all for that. It's not a voucher system. A lot of people call it a voucher system, but it's not really a voucher. An educational savings account is something different. And the money never goes to the parents directly. They don't have, it's not like they can spend it on anything they want. It's very restricted on what it can be spent for, but it can go to public or private schools either one, or it can go to private schools rather. And so that's a choice that I think parents ought to have, because to me, it's just a simple principle of freedom. And it's one of those foundations of freedom that we have to have. And, you know, and I believe we just need to put some of the basic foundational principles teaching our into our schools again. So I could go on that, but maybe you have another question.
Well, there's a lot of things to talk about, no doubt about that. You know, one of the things you have been criticized for is introducing a bill concerning marriage at the state legislature. You haven't been afraid to show your Christianity and your beliefs there. How do you respond to some of those criticisms, and is that something that you would pursue as governor?
Well, I heard one of those criticisms. Somebody wrote a piece about it, and they're saying, you know, Brad Sherman believes that rights come from God and not government, and the purpose of government is to protect those rights. Can you believe that? And so when I heard that, I almost laughed, because that's almost a direct quote from the Declaration of Independence. You see, this is what, I mean, the Declaration of Independence tells us that we have certain unalienable rights that come from our Creator. And it goes on to say, and to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And so that's the purpose of civil government, is to protect the rights that God gives us. And so we have to acknowledge God as a foundation of our rights. This nation was founded on those principles. So I make absolutely no apology for standing on Judeo-Christian ethics. And actually, you know, I had this paper I pulled out, and I didn't know that we were going to go here, but it's here it is. You know, did you know in 1854, the House and Senate Judiciary Committees took up an issue because people were trying to cleanse God or scrub God out of public education. Hmm. That was actually in 1853, and then in 1854, after they deliberated it, they made a statement from both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. And this is what they said. They said, had the people during the Revolution had a suspicion of any attempt to war against Christianity, that revolution would have been strangled in its cradle. At the time of the adoption of the Constitution and the amendments, the universal sentiment was that Christianity should be encouraged, but not any one sect. In this age, there can be no substitute for Christianity. That was the religion of the founders of the Republic, and they expected it to remain the religion of their descendants. So in 1854, that was the attitude of the federal government. And, you know, we don't want to force Christianity on anybody. If we were to force Christianity on anybody, it would cease to be Christianity. I think all genuine Christians understand that. But the bottom line is that someone's values will shape public policy. So I will protect the rights and stand up for the rights of anybody to do anything they want, you know, they want to, or believe anything they want to, as long as it doesn't hurt other people. And, you know, but at the same time, public policy doesn't have to agree with some of those philosophies. Somebody, again, somebody's value system will shape public policy. The idea of neutrality is just a myth. And when we try to adopt this neutrality system, all we're doing is laying down and allowing someone else's value system to have preeminence. And so so I'm not ashamed of the fact that we need to look at Christian values, biblical values, Judeo-Christian values, whatever you want to call it, and look at them for some guidelines in terms of civil government.
Back to a little more nuts and bolts like the economy. That's a heck of a transition there. But nevertheless, where are you on trying to improve? You know, how do you feel like the state of the economy is right now in Iowa, and where can you try and improve that as governor?
Well, I mean, there are several things that government can do. One of them is stay out of the way. I think the hard work and ingenuity and creativity of people is the primary driver of a good economy. But there are things, you know, we need a stable financial system. We need a system where people aren't afraid to invest because of, you know, instability. We need stable interest rates, all that sort of thing. And so these are things that, of course, government has to speak to. So, one of the biggest issues on the economy right now is property taxes. This is huge. I know we've worked on in the legislature, we've worked on income tax and reduction, and that's good, all for that. But when it really boils down to it, a reduction in our income tax doesn't affect the bottom line of most average people. It's just a very small thing. The area where we're really getting hammered is property taxes. And that's not a real easy answer. I know the thought that I've had for years, I remember bringing this up at a meeting probably 20, 25 years ago, is that why is it that we can work all of our lives to pay off our mortgage, and then we have to end up renting our property from our government? So I'm looking into some things like that. This is not an easy issue. We got to run some numbers and try to figure it out. But I'm hoping to find a way that where maybe at least the primary residence after a period of time of living in Iowa could be free of property tax. And again, that's certainly not a promise I can make, but I'm certainly pursuing that because taxes are just out of control.
And that's all the time we have for us. So, Brad, I guess the last thing is, if anybody wants to find out more information about you and your campaign, where would they go?
Well, Sherman4Iowa.com is our website, and we've got a place where you can sign up for information. We've got several issues spelled out there. We're continuing to add content to that website. And of course, there's a Facebook page as well. I think it's Sherman for Iowa as well, but if you search for it, I'm sure you'll find it. But that's how you get in touch with us.
Very good. It's good to talk to you again. Really appreciate your time, and best of luck on the campaign trail. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Brad Sherman, candidate, Republican candidate for Iowa governor, joining us here on KSOM.